Blog Talk Radio.
And if you happen to be from la 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 land,
The special call-in number is 347-857-1197. Please dial in with your right hand because we know where your left hand has been. Let's dive right in. In Islam, Muhammad is considered Al-Insan Al-Kamil, the ideal man. Muhammad is in no way considered divine, nor is he worshipped. No image of Muhammad is permitted, lest it encourage idolatry. But he is the model par excellence for all Muslims in how they should conduct themselves. It is through Muhammad's personal teachings and actions which make up the way of the Prophet, the Sunnah, that Muslims discern what is a good and holy life. Details about the Prophet, how he lived, what he did, his non-Quranic utterances, his personal habits, are indispensable knowledge, faithful Muslim. Allah! Boom. Knowledge of the Sunnah comes primarily from the Hadiths, which are reports about Muhammad's life, which were passed down orally until codified in the 8th century A.D., some 100 years after Muhammad's death. Now keep in mind, these were passed down orally by illiterate, inbred people. Oh, I know, that's not politically correct. But that's a fact, Jack. So the Hadith comprise the most important of the Islamic texts after the Quran. And they're a collection of anecdotes about Muhammad's life believed to have originated with those who knew him personally and were passed down over 100 years. Keep in mind that people will tell something from one person to the next, and by the time it spread around a room full of people at a cocktail party, it has morphed from John Smith went to the Bahamas to John Smith had an affair in the Bahamas and a love child and got venereal disease and had to have that treated, and the woman he had the affair with had his love child, and blah, 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 blah. And that only occurred at a cocktail party. The Hadith comprised the oral stories passed down over 100 years amongst a bunch of illiterate, inbred people, and we're supposed to take them as fact. Yeah. Anyway, moving right along, we need to keep all of this in mind when we talk to people, and we need to educate them, because research has shown that Muslims still share 75% of common DNA, which explains a lot about their behavior in the Middle East. There are thousands upon thousands of hadiths, some running to multiple pages, some barely a few lines in length. When the hadiths were first compiled in the 8th century AD, it became obvious that many were inauthentic. Or, let me go back and phrase that as only the general can. When the hadiths were first compiled in the 8th century AD, it became obvious that many were bullshit. The early Muslim scholars of hadith spent tremendous labor trying to determine which hadiths were authoritative and which were bullshit. The hadiths here come exclusively from the most reliable and authoritative collection, Sahih al-Bukhari, recognized as sound by all scholars of Islamic scholarship, translated by a Muslim scholar, and which may be found here. Different translations of hadith can vary breakdown of volume, book, and number, but the content is the same. For each hadith, the classifying information is listed first, then the name of the originator of the hadith, generally someone who knew Muhammad personally, then the content itself, while the absolute authenticity of even a sound hadith is hardly assured, they are nonetheless accepted as authoritative within an Islamic context. Why? I don't know. Because they're inbred and they're dumb. We would never believe this kind of bullshit, but we're not insane. Anyway, because Muhammad himself, the measuring stick of morality, his actions are not judged according to an independent moral standard, but rather established what the standard for Muslims properly is. Let us go over that one more time, because this is important. This is the key to Islam. Because Muhammad is himself the measuring stick of morality, his actions are not judged according to an independent moral standard, but rather establish what the standard for Muslims properly is. That is akin to saying that Hugh Hefner's actions are not judged according to the Ten Commandments, but rather are the established standard for which Christianity is to be judged. How many people would buy that bullshit? I mean, really? We're talking straight up blatant reason to allow anything that he saw, including taking his child bride, pedophilia, and anything else. But we're going to get further into that as we go further down the Islamic rabbit hole, and you're going to find that Islam is a death cult and a cult of evil, a cult of Satan. Because, well, who is it that really came to speak to Muhammad? It was the archangel, if you remember, from the first show that we did on July 12th. And you should go back and listen to Islam 101 so that you can keep up. Because the archangel Michael came down to speak to Muhammad. So moving right along, Volume 7, Book 62, Number 88, narrated, Ursa. The prophet wrote the marriage contract with Aisha, that was his child bride, while she was 6 years old, and consummated his marriage with her while she was 9 years old. And she remained with him for 9 years till his death. Yes, Muhammad was a pedophile and made pedophilia acceptable for all of Islam by his actions. Muhammad took a child bride, Aisha, at 6 years of age, and consummated his marriage with her at age 9, thus making pedophilia acceptable for all of Islam to this today, every Muslim throughout the world may take a child bride at age 6 and consummate their marriage at age 9. So, lock up your daughters. Lock up your grandchildren. Period. Volume 8, Book 82, number 795, narrated by Anas, the prophet cut off the hands and feet of men belonging to the tribe of Urayna and did not cauterize their bleeding limbs until they died. Why? Yeah, Muhammad's just kind of like that. Volume 2, Book 23, number 14, narrated by Abdullah bin Umar. The Jews of Medina brought to the Prophet a man and a woman from amongst them who have committed adultery, illegal sexual intercourse. He ordered both of them to be stoned to death near the place of offering the funeral prayers beside the mosque. Now, to this day, Islam still offers forth stoning as a form of punishment for moral crimes such as adultery. Why? Because that is what Muhammad commanded, not because Bob Dylan said everyone must get stoned. Islam is savagery. Islam is brutal. And you need to remember that. Volume 9, Book 84, number 57, narrated by Ikrima. Some Zanadika atheists were brought to Ali, the fourth caliph, and he burnt them. Now, if you remember, ISIS has been burning people left and right. And people keep saying that's not Islam. Our president, Barack Hussein Obama, formerly known as Barry Satoru, but changed his name because it sounded too American, has said that ISIS is burning and stoning people is not pure Islam. But he's lying. And under Islamic law, lying is acceptable as long as it advances the cause of Islam. Now let's go back here and look at this. The Zanadika atheists were brought to Ali, the fourth caliph, and he burnt them. News of this event reached Ibn Abbas, who said, "If I had been in his place, I would not have burnt them, as Allah's apostle forbade it, saying, do not punish anybody with Allah's punishment, fire. I would have killed them according to the statement of Allah's apostle. Whoever changes his Islamic religion, then kill him." Well, burning them to death is killing them. So, the fourth caliph, Ali, did establish a new way of killing, and ISIS to this day is using that new way of killing. Volume 1, Book 2, number 25, narrated by Abu Huraya. Allah's apostle was asked, "What is the best deed?" And he replied, "To believe in Allah and his apostle Muhammad." The questioner then asked, "What is the next in goodness?" And he replied, "To participate in jihad in Allah's cause." In Islam, there is no natural sense of morality or justice that transcends the specific examples and injunctions outlined in the Quran and the Sunnah, because Muhammad is considered Allah's final prophet and the Quran the eternal and unalterable words of Allah himself. There is also no evolving morality that permits the modification or integration of Islamic morality with that of other sources. The entire Islamic moral universe devolves solely from the life and teachings of Muhammad. When Christians and people like Zudi Jasser say that Islam can evolve, Islam needs to evolve, Islam needs to come into the present day society, they are ignoring Islam's basic tenet. In Islam, there is no natural sense of morality or justice. The Quran and the Sunnah is what it is because Muhammad is considered Allah's final prophet. The Quran is the eternal, unalterable words of Allah himself. There is no evolving morality like there was in Christianity when the Bible was rewritten and Christianity became non-violent. There is no modification or integration of Islamic morality with that from other sources. The entire Islamic moral universe devolves solely from the life and teachings of Muhammad, along with the reliable hadiths. A further source of accepted knowledge about Muhammad comes from the Surah, or Life of the Prophet, composed by one of Islam's great scholars, Muhammad bin Ishaq, in the 8th century AD. Muhammad's prophetic career is meaningfully divided into two segments. First, in Mecca, where he labored for 14 years to make converts to Islam, and later in the city of Medina, the city of the Apostle of God, where he became a powerful political and military leader. In Mecca, he was a quasi-biblical leader preaching repentance and charity, harassed and rejected by those around him. Why? Because he didn't have an army. He was a pussy. Later, in Medina, we see him able to commandeer and become a commander and strategist who systematically conquered and killed those who opposed him. Why? Because he was a bully. He had an army. He was no longer a pussy. He was able to get people to go out and do his bidding. It is the latter years of Muhammad's life, from 622 AD to his death in 632, that are rarely broached in polite company. In 622, when the prophet was better than 50 years old, he and his followers made the Hijra, the emigration or flight from Mecca to the oasis of Yathrib, later named Medina, some 200 miles from the north. Muhammad's new monotheism had angered the pagan leaders of Mecca, and the flight to Medina was precipitated by a probable attempt on Muhammad's life. Muhammad had sent emissaries to Medina to ensure his welcome. He was accepted by the Medinan tribes as the leader of the Muslims and as arbiter of intertribal disputes. Shortly before Muhammad fled the hostility of Mecca, a new batch of Muslim converts pledged their loyalty to him on a hill outside Mecca called Aqaba. Ishaq here conveys the surah on the significance of this event. When God gave permission to his apostle to fight, the second oath of allegiance at Aqaba contained conditions involving war which were not in the first act of fealty. Now they, Muhammad's followers, bound themselves to war against all and sundry for God and his apostle, while he promised them for faithful service, thus the reward of paradise. That Muhammad's nascent religion underwent a significant change at this point is plain. The scholarly Ishaq clearly intends to impress on his Muslim readers that while it is his early years, Islam was a relatively tolerant creed that would endure insult and forgives the ignorant. Allah soon required Muslims to war against all and sundry for God and his apostle. The Islamic calendar testifies to the paramountcy of the Hijra by setting year one from the date of its occurrence. The year of Hijra 622 AD is considered more significant than the year of Muhammad's birth or death or that of the first Quranic revelation, because Islam is first and foremost a political military enterprise. It was only when Muhammad left Mecca with its paramilitary band that Islam achieved its proper military articulation. The years of the Islamic calendar, which employs lunar months, are designated in English as AH, or after Hijra. You get that, folks? Muhammad was a big coward, a giant pussy, until he got his paramilitary shit together. And then he became a warrior. And after that, Islam changed. And that is when they became badasses. When we come back next week and we talk on Tuesday, we are going to talk about the Battle of Badr. And this is the first significant engagement fought by the Prophet. And it is significant in that it recognizes the first big change in Islam and how far Muhammad was willing to go. And it demonstrates the evil that is Islam and how the Archangel Michael influenced Islam and made it the devil cult that it is. Those of you that missed the first show, please go back and listen to it, because the five pillars of Islam and the Archangel Michael are very significant to the understanding of where we're headed. We have a long way to go, but you need to know this, because these peaceful Muslims that are your neighbors are not peaceful, they're not kind, and they will slit your throats first chance they get. God bless you. God bless America. Stand with me, and we'll win this fight. Stand away from me. I can't help you. God bless y'all. It's time to take our country back.
Sometimes cause I wanna light up underneath the no smoking sign. Sometimes I wish they'd tell me how justice got so blind. I wish they'd just leave.